Hello, listeners. We are so happy you are enjoying the podcast. One hope with this podcast is for more people to discover the amazing story of the Mahabharata. Liking, subscribing, and reviewing us helps other people discover the mind-bending story of the Mahabharata through our podcast. We also want to get better at podcasting, which would mean putting in more time and buying better equipment. So we have set up a Patreon, a method for you to financially support the podcast and get some exclusive Not Your Mother's Mahabharata benefits in return. Head over to patreon.com/spjayaraj. That is patreon.com/spjayaraj. patreon.com/spjayaraj to check out our cool member benefits.
Our guest today is Peter Pearson, who you'll hear more about later in the show. All right, let's get started. This is not your mother's Mahabharata. Beware. It's fucking epic. Hosted by S.P. Jayaraj.
Welcome to Not Your Mother's Mahabharata. I am your host, S.P. Jayaraj. With me, as always, is my wife, Azure Anderson.
Hello, Azure Anderson. He looked at his notes to remember to say my name.
I did.
He did.
Yeah, because I only have names written down
in
my notes, because that's like the hardest thing to remember. Which is nice with this process that I'm getting to remember them. Speaking of names, I would like to
find out. You didn't have Azure's name written down, did you?
I don't want to speak to that.
Got it.
Yeah. Peter Pearson!
Hey, thank you for having me.
Yeah, I am really happy to have you here.
I'm excited. I've been thinking about this.
Oh, awesome. Who are you? Who are you, Peter Pearson?
Who are you, and how did you get in our house?
Well, You do have the retinal scans from when I enter your apartment. That's true. Beyond that, we've known each other, about 8 years at this point, I think? Yes.
About.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we've been married, Ash and I have been married for, it's going to be 10 years.
Yeah, and it was a little bit after that.
Yeah,
so we met about 8 years ago, sort of through the writing world. My wife, Kate, who officiated your wedding.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I write books for kids and middle graders. And play a little bit of music. Work over at Children's Minnesota doing fun events and marketing for them. And just an overall big time fan of stories. And so when you invited me to do this, when I finally remembered to, because of my two little kiddos, I was kind of like, yes, let's do it.
Yeah.
So here I am.
And then fortunately, we had some issues with, I guess, our car ran out of gas.
That I did pick you up because your car ran out of gas a few minutes from your house, which is also a few minutes from my house.
You came and rescued us, and then we scheduled this podcast.
I dropped you off in front of your apartment, and almost literally on my shining steed, and then we scheduled this podcast, and now it's not. It's basically everything the audience needs to know.
And you and I actually met at least a little before you and Kate met, because we did the writing event together. It was actually at the State Fair.
That's right! We were at the booth together, were we not? Yeah.
And we didn't know each other too well, so,
Right.
We smiled and waved to each other.
I was, repping the Kid Lit program, and you were repping the adult program.
Yeah. You were very pleasant. I was pretending to be very pleasant.
We both were.
And
and look at us now. Doing the same thing on record.
You both look extremely pleasant. I must say.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
Can't tell if that's a compliment or not. You look pleasant.
I said extremely pleasant.
Extremely pleasant.
Yeah.
Okay. That changes it.
It does.
Is it too much?
Pleasant's just such a casual word. When you're extremely pleasant, I just picture someone grinning too widely.
You guys look fucking amazing.
I like that.
Or epic.
epic. Would mean you were wearing wigs and high heels, I think. I don't know. That's
took
epic.
Off both of those before I came over.
Well,
so.
Good. I want you to be comfortable.
Good.
Yeah, as long as you're comfortable.
It's too hot for that. Too hot for wigs right now.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying doing this because I get to tell a story. I get to tell this great story. I'm also a fantasy writer, and so
It helps me to just know this mythic story. Tell me a little bit about your connection with stories.
Goodness. I mean, stories... So, I mean, there's linguistic theorizing out there that the reason that language developed at all was so we could tell stories. Like, I think that stories, I mean, are how we organize the world, right? It's how you connect things that are important and leave out the stuff that's not important. Mm-hmm. People who tell boring stories are the ones who leave everything in, right? They tell you every single step. They don't compress time or extend time. They don't know how to sort of, like, skip between the important bits or call back to the things that are important now. And so they don't know how to organize, to use stories as an organizing principle. They just read transcripts. Mm-hmm. And so a story is like the good parts version of the transcript. And it's where you tell people how to draw their eye, and it's like stringing beads on a necklace. And when you tell people a story, you can actually change what they think. Yeah. I mean, it's like a magic power, right?
It is a magic power.
You've read books that have changed the way you thought about the world.
Absolutely.
I've read books that have changed the way you thought about it. Mm-hmm. That is real magic.
Yeah.
And so that's why I love stories. That's why I studied stories, because I think that, the ability to tell a good story, even if it's not a fictional story, is the ability to change what people care about, and help the world make sense. And so, anyway, point being, I dig stories.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, all of that is why I'm really engaged in, like, this story for sure. I took a long time to get into it. It took, like, the pandemic when I actually, like, picked it up.
Yeah.
In spite of, like, you know, growing up Indian and my grandfather telling me, like the story of how this story was written, which is its own, like, little mythic tale.
Mm.
And... yeah, but then once I did get into it, I'm like, this is fantastic. And it's so much more original than I thought. I think a reason I struggled with, like, getting into it was also that I kind of loved the Nordic mythology. And although I haven't, like, super studied Greek and Roman, mainly because, like, it's always been in the back of my head. Like, oh, everyone else is doing that.
It's like playing guitar in college. Come on.
Yeah. Everyone's doing it. I'm going to pick up the tuba.
Exactly.
The tuba?
Yeah.
Not everyone's playing the tuba.
Exactly. Then.
Yeah. So I get it. I understand what you're saying.
See what he did there?
I do.
Yeah. So I studied a little, like, Persian mythology.
For a second there, you were like, Tatish, you are misinformed about tuba adoption worldwide.
I really, really did.
What version of Twitter are you on? Like, are you on tuba Twitter?
I don't understand. All right. I guess
that'd be called X-Tuba now.
Yeah.
I read that backwards.
Got it.
Please continue.
Yeah. So I did, like...
As Willy Wonka would say, strike that.
Strike that. Reverse it. I said that all the time.
It's a good one.
Nobody ever gets it.
Thanks, Gene Wilder.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Gene Wilder.
Thanks, Gene Wilder.
So, you know, I told you a little Persian mythology, and there were these connections, like, with Joseph Campbell's old monomyth, which I loved.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get to this, and it's... This is just different. This is not those. There are always some kind of similarities and things. And then there are some people, like, making connections between Greek mythology and Hindu mythology that's kind of through stories, which is, like, how it's affected things. I think it goes down to even Alexander the Great. But ultimately, like, this book is supposed to be containing of everything.
How old is this text?
So it is... It's 3000 BCE and then maybe 1500 BCE.
Okay.
It's gone through revisions. It's not always been a text. It's been an oral tradition.
Sure, sure.
And so as it's kind of been changed and as people have told the story and, like, grabbed onto certain aspects of the story, it's just kind of changed.
Okay.
And then some, as kind of stories should.
Yeah.
Did we get to your, what is your familiarity with this one then?
Yeah, very little. I've traveled to India. I know some stories about, like, you know, Lakshmi and things like that, but I don't, when you mentioned this to me, I was like, I do not know what that is. I kind of know the Ramayana, I guess.
Okay.
But
cool.
But like in a the way a white Midwesterner would know the Ramayana. So
I don't know anything about the Ramayana.
Yeah. I just want to let the listeners know that Peter is white.
I am.
Yeah.
I am. That's That's
and
me.
A Midwesterner.
I am.
I am too.
Anyway.
If you didn't realize that already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's my familiarity. And I intentionally did no research. I have no idea of the scope of this myth or, you know, anything about it. So
okay.
I'm ready to dig on in.
Well, let's dig on in. I'll draw one connection with you is that the Ramayana, the way that chronologically happened before the Mahabharata, and in
okay.
that story, it's about Rama, hence the Ramayana.
Yeah, yeah.
And Rama is an incarnation of Vishnu,
mm-hmm.
one of the main gods, I would say, in Hindu mythology. Once Rama passes, his next life, I don't think there were any in between, but is of Krishna.
Okay.
And Krishna features quite prominently in the Mahabharata.
Okay.
He's not so much in today's. He has been born. So last time what we covered is we're covering this one family that are kings and queens, mostly kings. And we've just kind of traced them through the generations. So our last version, our last tale that we told, we took us to the point where we have... So, all of one family,
mm-hmm.
you have...
Previously on the
previously
Mahabharata.
Previously on. Not your mother's Mahabharata.
Yes.
Exactly.
We are looking at Dhritarashtra. So, Dhritarashtra is a king of Hastinapura, or Bharata. Hastinapura is kind of the city. It means city of elephants.
Okay.
But that's the capital. So, Dhritarashtra is... King of Hastinapura, he was born blind. His wife is Gandhari, who, when she married Dhritarashtra, put on a blindfold and has not taken it off and has vowed not to take it off.
I have mixed feelings about.
That's kind of hardcore, but also,
huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, she mixed. Also had a blessing that she would have 100 sons.
Is that a blessing?
That's what I said.
It's... was an interesting birth.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
The oldest of that son now is Duryodhana. So he's a guy we're going to keep coming back to. When Duryodhana was born, the shit went down in the world. Like, there were storms, there were... Every evil animal, as we've learned in mythology, were doing evil animal things.
Ooh.
They were probably clashing with each other. There was just... There was a lot of bad mojo going on.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some that said that this is this kid who's been born. So, you know, like, I don't know if you guys have seen The Omen. But
if
this,
not.
But, you know, this
get
is the
present.
Devil.
I get the
The devil's been
it.
Born. We need to do away with
gotcha.
Him. They were like, you know, the king and queen were like, no.
Doing away with the devil, that always totally works out from what I understand.
Yeah. So they didn't want to do that, clearly. So, this is the line of the course. So, Dhritarashtra's sons are known as the Kauravas. And that is Duryodhana, and then 100 of his brothers, and then one sister, Dushala. And
so, it's
then...
like the Smurfs, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Because the interesting thing
excellent.
Now about
excellent.
This is that Duryodhana and, like, one other brother are the only ones that really are kind of talked about. The other ones are mentioned, but they don't have their own, like, real stories. They're just... They're wrapped into this whole thing of being the 100 brothers.
They're all just kind of this doofy chorus that goes around.
Yeah, exactly. Doing whatever Duryodhana says.
We are
says.
The men
okay.
of 100 brothers.
The exception
like
to that...
100 brides for 100 brothers.
Yeah, but there's not 100 brides for them. There's just
oh.
a bunch of brothers. Well, there might be.
There might be coming forward. We'll see. We're not there
I
yet.
I don't know.
They're very young at this
yet.
Point. So Duryodhana, like, as we really get into
God,
his
are
part
just,
of the
like,
tale...
Are they just, like, little toddlers running around, then?
Yeah, like 100 toddlers running around.
Oh my god.
Yeah. There's the one half-brother, and the names will, if you forget, you know, just let me know, we'll get back to them.
I'll just steal your notebook.
Yeah, just steal the notebook. Is Yuyutsu, who was actually not Gandhari's kid. Gandhari was pregnant for 2 years. So Dhritarashtra became, let's say, impatient.
With hexadecatuplets.
Yeah. What is the centuplets?
I don't know. I centuplets. I guess you could just get it all done in one shot.
Yeah. You just need to know this.
Okay.
Gandhari gave birth to a sphere of ironclad flesh.
Oh, God.
Jesus Christ.
After 2 years of being pregnant.
Yeah. And she kind of got angry because, well...
Of course.
at some point, and something that happens, which you started beating kind of.
I mean, at a certain point, your womb is just kind of done.
Yeah.
She started punching herself until it came out.
And that's what came out.
It's horrifying. Mm-hmm.
Wow. So she birthed an iron bowling ball.
Yes. Iron skin covered yes. bowling ball, basically.
Yeah.
That is
iron skin. I would say iron skin.
That's horrifying.
Yeah.
Continue.
It is, yes.
A rishi, so a wise man who's lived in the forest, who has magic powers and wisdom and all that shit.
Mm-hmm.
Sprinkled some water in
it. A wizard ascetic.
That's yeah. great. Yeah. Wizard ascetic sprinkled some water in it, started removing bits and putting them into vases.
Uh-huh.
with ghee in it.
Yeah. And which is delicious.
Yeah, which is delicious. And that's what these little specks of flesh fed on. That's where they grew up and were born out of. So they broke out of the pot when they were ready to be born.
So it's kind of like old school IVF.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was those 100. In the meantime,
I guess IVF with V is for vase.
Oh, yeah, I like that. We'll figure out the other syllables. So, that was Dhritarashtra. His brother is Pandu. Pandu was born as an albino.
Mm-hmm.
And otherwise, very physically fit and strong. It should be mentioned that Dhritarashtra is also actually very strong. But blind, and so that kind of complicates, like, oh, who's going to be king?
Mm-hmm.
Pandu, though the second son, is stronger.
Is this one of those stories where it's like, it is only the blind who truly see? Is there that aspect?
You know, I would actually say no.
Or is it just, it's just kind of a pain in the butt, like you can't see anything?
It, you know, what's interesting is that how they, Duryodhana as this kid who kind of becomes evil. Mm-hmm. Some of the theories are that, well, you know, his parents weren't really watching what he was doing.
One of them definitely wasn't.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Neither of them.
Okay.
You know, because she doesn't take this off. Like,
yep.
She has
oh, right,
she
yeah.
has the blindfold on.
Yep.
So.
Blind by choice is a very small category
yeah.
people.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Pandu basically does this whole thing where he takes, like, he just gets whole new land for the kingdom, doing very well. However, he gets cursed in that he cannot have kids.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, fuck this shit. And he goes to live in the woods with his two
I mean, statistically,
wives.
It's probably good that there at least some people can have kids in this
yeah.
story.
Yeah, I guess this is ancient. Yeah, with 100 of them, right?
I mean,
yeah.
the math of that gets pretty
yeah,
grim.
But they're vase kids.
Oh, yeah. Well.
Don't judge them.
I mean, they're probably all weirdly shaped.
I mean, I guess,
yeah.
yeah.
Like
yeah.
do
kids do come out womb shaped, so.
How do they get out of the vases then, you know?
Uh-huh.
Maybe they hulk out of them.
Like that?
Yeah. I mean, like, they're like little baby
I
birds.
I broke it with my elbows.
Maybe they have.
Oh, that's
egg,
true.
They have,
they're just clay pots.
Maybe they have vase teeth. Like egg teeth.
Ugh. I don't, oh, it got worse. Oh. It got worse.
Listen,
yeah.
you're the
it
one delving
worse.
Into the weird specifics of this.
I know.
I'm just.
But
I'm just.
Let's move away
this
from
is,
them.
This
okay,
is my
let's move
favorite,
away from them.
Favorite part so far, though, it's so visual.
Uh huh.
So like visceral and visual and like this. Oh.
And viscous.
Mm-hmm. And viscous. And now there's teeth. And I'm upset.
Okay.
But.
All the hallmarks of a good story.
So
I agree. Please continue.
Pandu, the brother, who kind of is very well equipped, the person they expect to be king, he gets cursed that he cannot have kids.
Okay.
If he has sex, he will die.
Oh, that's
yeah.
worse than being barren.
And he's got two beautiful wives who he can't fuck now.
So his dick is like booby trapped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he decides to just, he says, fuck it, I'm gonna go live in the woods, I'm just going to be celibate because I kind of have to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then so something that happens in the story is that celibacy in combination with like other like mental practices and being focused, it leads to superpowers.
Mm.
It's how the rishis kind of have their superpowers. And so Pandu's like, fuck it. That's the life that's going to be.
It all just backs up into your brain and you get enlightened.
It's literally that though.
Is that
yeah.
the theory?
Yeah.
The
no,
theory.
It's like, and
wow.
We looked it up because there
okay.
are some, because this is all tied to Indian culture things and Ayurveda.
It's so insane.
That's exactly it though. Like, it's like, it is
wow.
the brain is the first part that is affected by celibacy. Like that, the goodness is absorbed back into the body.
Wow.
Primarily the brain.
Hmm.
To me, that there's something like magical about like the complexity of human life, and it's like, you know, hey, if you want to be celibate and become like a super genius at something,
mm-hmm.
the body provides.
I have a visual for this too, but I'm not going to tell
you. Oh, okay.
Continue.
I'm okay with that. Pandu ends up having, however...
As long as you don't have something auditory, just go with it.
No.
Okay, good.
I mean, it could be, but I'm not going to.
Kunti is Pandu's first wife, and the older wife. She had a blessing so that she actually could fuck gods. She can call upon a god to come to give her a child. And no one really knew she had this, but she tells Pandu. And what's nice in the system is that basically the system means that like those will be Pandu's kids because she's married to Pandu.
Mm-hmm.
So that way he still will get to be a father. So she called upon three gods. She's actually done it four times because she did it when she first got this gift, but that was years ago when she was a kid.
Well, teenager.
Yeah. Young kid.
It's an intense discovery to make.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah. But in this case, so she's got three kids from this. They are Yudhishthira, and these are now the main characters of the Mahabharata. We've got Duryodhana from Dhritarashtra, and now the Pandavas. So the Pandavas are Yudhishthira, whose true father is Yama, the god of death, the god of Dharma and destiny, essentially. I equate Dharma and destiny. The second kid is Bhima.
Okay.
Not to be confused with, although often is with me, the grandfather, whose name is Bhishma. We're going to stick with just Bhima for most of this. Gotcha. Bhima is the son of the wind. Super fucking strong.
Yeah, wow.
You know, like tornadoes and all that sort of stuff. Arjuna
twirls a lot. Kid won't sit still.
A vortex child.
Uh-huh. He is. He doesn't. Arjuna, which is the name you might be familiar with, is the son of Indra.
Okay.
And Arjuna is an exceptional archer. And in the Bhagavad Gita, it's that conversation between Arjuna and Krishna.
Okay.
And in fact, when Arjuna is born, Krishna is either born like at the same time or close to it. And there's all those foretellings that these two are the reincarnations of Vishnu together.
Hmm. How does that work?
I don't know.
Okay.
But that is there. Because there's other things where like there's reincarnations of gods in this where that god's still around doing their thing.
I feel like reincarnations are always singular, but...
Yeah. Not so much with this.
Okay.
Hmm.
So they're both like Horcruxes.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, maybe.
Yeah.
Good or maybe they're just parts of Vishnu.
Mm-hmm.
Aspects.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that a concept that they have?
Or still whole and part of the bigger picture, you know?
Okay.
Right.
Fascinating.
Like, this is where it's like the imagination's at play, where it's like... And who knows, maybe just someone voted wrong, and now like everyone's like 3,000 years later.
I think a lot of religions are based on typos.
Sure. People latch on to the typos.
Yeah.
Because they're different.
Because
they're not expected. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, oh, what he meant was, should kill my neighbor.
Oh,
I get
terrible.
It now. What?
That'll happen soon.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
I foretold the future.
Kunti has had three kids. And then Madhuri also wanted kids. So Kunti uses this kind of spell for Madhuri, the second wife. And Madhuri has two kids, Nakula and Sahadeva, who are twins and the sons of twin gods.
Okay.
So she had a grand old time.
Wow.
I was just going to say that she had a very fun night with twins.
Yeah.
Wow. So she just sort of had like a cosmic threesome.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Every time the god comes down, it is a good time.
Yeah.
I mean, I figured
for her.
Kunti was excited to fuck.
I feel like the gods come down for like two reasons. They're going to smite someone or they're going to ravish someone.
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I will say, Kunti loved being ravaged by Vayu.
Okay.
God of wind. Like, that was a treat for her.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it was excellent.
So.
When her husband can't do it, so.
So they are living in kind of the forest and the woods, and they're just the 5, 6, 7 of them. And they've made friends with kind of the forest folk who are also rishis as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just kind of continuing their lives there while everything is going on with Duryodhana and with Dhritarashtra's 100 kids and Duryodhana expecting to be king and wanting to be king someday.
Okay.
Yeah, in the palace in Hastinapura. So, there comes a point when Everything's going well with Pandu. He hasn't thought about sex for a long time. He's raising these kids of gods, mm-hmm. you know, loving the experience. And then there comes a day, spring, love is in the air, uh-huh. animals are doing it, uh-huh. everyone's doing it.
Uh-huh.
Kunti goes off with the kids
uh-huh.
For who knows what.
Sure.
And there's a bake sale.
And a bake sale. Took him to a forest bake sale.
Aha, uh-huh, he knew uh-huh. it.
And Madhvi goes to bathe by the river.
Uh-huh.
And
oh,
in like a sexy way.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
In an unintentionally sexy way.
I mean, she's unintentionally sexy.
She is unintentionally
she
sexy.
She just is. She's got it going on.
And mm-hmm. Pandu gets a glimpse of her.
Oh, no.
Does he get a garment-rending boner?
Yeah. What is a garment-rending boner?
What do you mean?
Do I want to be able to picture that? No, don't draw it out for me. Oh, yeah, sure.
Yes.
Okay. A garment.
Poking out of the
I mean,
garment.
Just imagine like a flagpole erupting from someone's...
Yeah.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. I guess for me that's just a boner, but that makes sense to have those details. We don't know what they're wearing at this point, so
right.
we know.
It was probably drapey.
Descriptions are important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Pandu gets super horny,
mm-hmm.
hasn't been horny in 18 years.
Oh, no.
And he just kind of goes for it.
Uh-oh.
And this is where the story could get a little ugly. Because
mm-hmm.
depending on the different versions, but basically... He takes Madhvi. And Madhvi uh-huh. doesn't want to because he's gonna die.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then she's in the middle of it. Maybe she's like, oh, maybe the Vishi's curse is gonna go. Maybe she's actually getting raped.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, I don't want to, like, not say that that's something that happened.
Yeah.
But...
It does sound kind of rapey.
It sounds pretty rapey.
Yeah. And I read three different versions and I was like, the rapey one is...
I mean, you just said that he took her.
Yes, I did. Yeah. That's the one I'm going to draw from.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if he took her in the sense that I don't know if he got to it.
Okay.
Because he dies.
Before.
Oh.
He dies in the mix of it.
Okay.
Depending on how strict the Rishi's curse was. Because
oh,
some
gosh.
Say the Rishi's curse was just touch. Some was like, nope, physical act of sex would
yeah.
do it.
I mean, a boner that intense might have just caused an aneurysm.
That could be.
Yeah, maybe that was what happened.
Yeah.
Sure.
It had been so long.
If we wanna look at Pandu as being just a good old dude, then we can go with that one. That's not the one in my head.
A good old dude.
Yeah, who doesn't?
With an aneurysm. No, he was still raping her, but he had an aneurysm from the boner.
Oh, yeah, because
yeah,
he hasn't had one in 18 years. Okay.
We're not saying that he's good. I mean,
okay.
he might have been good until now.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's taken a
he's
turn.
He's been good until now, but, yep, and then a turn for the worse because he's clearly been punished for it.
Okay.
He dies. Madhvi screams, you know. She calls, like, you know, the kids come. The kids and Kunti come, and Madhvi says, like, keep the kids away. Kunti comes and sees that he's dead. And he's like, what the fuck happened? You know, they start to argue, and, like, Kunti's angry at Madhvi. I mean, there's always been, like, a thing between them, because they're both married to the same person. But Kunti's always like, well, you saw him at his happiest, I guess. You saw the light of his life. You saw him in the heat of the moment, like, fuck you, and they argue, and then the kids come, and they all kind of mourn together. And then the strangest kind of argument happens, where Kunti and Madhvi start fighting over who's going to join Pandu on the funeral fire.
They fight over that.
Yeah. Now, in this world, there is reincarnation. A lot
yeah.
of these characters are reincarnated people. You would, like, you...
Are you pro or con, or pro
yeah.
or anti-funeral pyre throwing on?
Anti.
Oh, okay.
You're anti. Okay.
I think it's ridiculous.
You're gonna have to tell my parents.
It's fine. And and you're screwing over your sister wife because you have, what, five children?
So, that is the conversation that happens here. It's like, well...
Like, who's going to get screwed?
Who's taking care of the kids?
Right.
Hey, bitch, you want me to take care
who
of those kids?
Who gets to get reincarnated?
Oh, hell no.
Yeah.
This horny bastard. And who gets to take five kids on their own?
Because reincarnated post-curse, right? So presumably it'd be like, it'd be your incarnation and it's going to be like, making up for it.
I mean, that's afterlife though, right? Reincarnated means you could be anything. Anyone or anything, right?
Yeah. There's, you know, there's other worlds and there's reincarnation. Like, it cycles kind of back in somewhere, so, like...
And relationships do not reincarnate. Like, I mean, there's, like, they would have no reason to believe that they would be sort of, like, proximal.
You know, if you die in that funeral pyre with him, then yes, then you...
Oh, yes?
Then that's the belief here.
Really?
That's the belief
that
they're
going to
get.
You grab onto their coattails,
you
and then it's like,
onto
okay.
Their coattails,
you grab onto that
the body passes in the same point, you
oh,
grab the toe.
Grab onto that ashy dick, and...
And the curse
Thank
is done now.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So they start kind of fighting.
Didn't know I'd be talking about this when I came over tonight.
Ashy
really
dicks.
That's what we're here for.
Said a lot of things that I have literally never said before.
It's amazing.
It's really incredible.
We haven't even got through most
really
of this.
Really eliciting
awesome.
Things.
You can't really say in front of your toddler.
Oh, yeah. That's
yeah.
That's true. They
yes.
will not be listening to this until they're 35.
Hello, listeners. Have you ever wondered if a dump truck would make a good pet? Well, our friend Peter Pearson can answer that. He is the author of two seriously silly yet informative children's books that I personally adore. How to Eat an Airplane and How to Walk a Dump Truck. His latest book, How to Walk a Dump Truck, is a vehicular spin on pet adoption, featuring an unlikely pet, a dump truck. Kids will not only laugh, but learn. Just like a new pet, a new dump truck is a heap of responsibility, but it's also loads of fun. In fact, the folks over at Booklist call it a story that is sometimes hilarious and always absurd, a treat for vehicle-loving kids. You can find Peter's books online or order them from your favorite local bookstore. All right, back to the show.
All right, where was I?
Ashy
Dick.
Yeah, so they're arguing about the funeral.
They're arguing
oh, yeah,
over
that's...
who gets to join on the funeral pyre.
And who gets to take care of all the damn kids.
And who gets
they
to get
they
the
want
to
know who gets to be the plus one on the funeral pyre.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they kind of chat it out and talk it out and...
Chat it out.
Like, and they kind of like come to a consensus that, because one has to be here, the kids, one apparently has got to go. Then neither one of them going to be happy unless that happens. Because
so
they want, like, Pandu needs someone with him is the idea.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Can he take care of himself in there?
Madhuri kind of agrees, like, kind of points out that, like, they've always been a little jealous of each other, but one thing is that Madhuri's kids are the twins, Nakula and Sahadeva, the younger ones. She was always kind of more focused on them. Like,
okay.
Rearing them up. So she didn't love the other ones as much. Like, these are the two that she really took care of.
That makes sense.
It does make sense. Kunti, on the other hand, didn't have that problem. Kunti took care of all five of them. Had
oh.
no issues with that. Saw them all as her kids. As Pandu's kids.
Okay.
So, and I forget which one, but like one of the kids even started to kind of love Kunti as well.
Mm. So is that fact discussed in the funeral pyre negotiations?
That is what is being discussed in the funeral pyre negotiations.
Okay.
And so they agree that, okay, Kunti stays behind.
Mm-hmm.
And Madhuri's gonna go, go on to the next life. So they do the funeral pyre, the Rishis help out.
They
do
the funeral pyre, it just sounds
hold
so
on,
clean.
Hold on,
yeah.
Hold on.
They get
so,
everything ready.
Oh, they build it.
They
okay.
build it, and it's
oh,
like,
I gotcha.
Incense
I thought the
and,
same thing, like she jumped on it, just was like, gladly.
You know, they do the funeral pyre thing.
It's fine,
yeah.
It's over. Tell us how.
You know, they prepared it all, and the body's there, and... She sits in the lotus position at the foot of the covered body of Pandu, and the fire is lit. There's intense pain for her for a while, and then, you know, it eases out.
She burns to death.
She burns to death.
As someone who has just lit on fire.
That, yeah.
That is not how it went.
You weren't in the lotus position.
Not
you
how it
went. You
weren't
in the lotus position.
No.
It wasn't just a flash of pain and then nothing.
It's the opposite.
But this was like, you're talking about a regular fire.
Yeah.
It's like, this is a funeral pyre, which I'm on. I'm sure it'll be different. You can tell me in the next life. I think just we'll be having a discussion later.
No, it's fine.
In some of the texts I was reading, they talked about how like the original tradition was that a wife would sit at the base and the fire would be lit and then she'd get up and leave.
Great.
Yeah, it was just like to be there when the when the body passes.
Sure. I see.
That was like one of the... That was what it
You would be willing to do that?
I would do that.
Yeah, okay.
For sure.
Okay. I guess this is a funeral. Like, how should we... We haven't talked about how we're going to figure out a death thing.
We're
so we'll see.
Doing this.
Okay.
It won't be on a podcast, probably.
It'll probably be on a podcast. Yeah.
We will not record it.
We'll see what the context is like.
Oh, good
that
lord.
That was the original, and then it's... And yeah, there's been terrible...
Fascinating.
It's called Sati Burning. It's taken many different directions, but yeah, there was apparently a time when, like, this was just meant to be it, and it was... And when it did happen, it was always optional.
Mm-hmm.
It was always, like, the choice of the bride to do it. Unlike some other terrible examples I've heard of since.
Yeah.
Which are definitely absolutely not.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
And then there's the decision to be made that it's time to return to Hastinapura. It's time to return to the kingdoms.
To Elephant City.
We're back.
Impressed
that I remember that.
Yeah. The kids have been, you know, your kids have been learning from the best of us here by the wise rishis. You know, they know their shit. They know how to rule. They all have their different skills. Arjuna, for one, is like an exceptional archer. And I think it's actually Sahadeva. In some renditions, Pandu actually told his kids that he foretold this. Like, he saw that he would die at some point. And he told his kids to, when that happens, to make sure they get a piece of his flesh to eat. And it'll give them magical powers.
Okay.
And knowledge. Kind of like, there's a similar story in Nordic mythology where a dude eats a salmon. But this is actually the father's body. Now, in the all of this with the funeral pyre and things, like, they don't really get that. But there is, like, an ant that has somehow scuttled away with a tiny fragment of Pandu's
body. I say that this is weird and... As though I was not a person who took communion all through childhood.
Right.
So it means like, wait a minute, this is a super common idea.
Yeah.
No, I'm not, I mean, I've heard of the, I mean, eating flesh as a healing property in some cultures. Like, what is it, Egyptian, was it an Egyptian culture where, it's a very ancient one, but you basically soak a corpse in honey. For many years, and then that vat of honey is used as a healing property, and it's.
I wonder if anyone
tried
it.
Very powerful.
I wonder if anyone tried that with the honey and without the flesh and had the same results.
I don't know. No one will ever know.
Sahadeva sees an ant scuttling away and sees a morsel, and so picks that piece and eats it, and he becomes extremely wise. But
not bad for just one morsel.
Not bad for like a tiny that an ant could was carrying.
I mean, they can carry 50 strong. Times their weight.
That's something. Okay, so like a cockroach is worth then, let's say, of I don't know,
just a little
of toe,
a little meat. Gobbet.
Yeah,
a little bit of meat. It doesn't need to be a cockroach. I like the ant better.
The ant. Well,
it's
I'm just thinking of the size.
For some reason.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of the size of like.
Ants are stronger than cockroaches, aren't they?
I'm thinking like an ant can lift a cockroach if you're saying 100 times or 50 times more.
You're saying the morsel is like a cockroach?
Let's just say a tiny morsel.
Yes, that was way better.
We're getting a lot into insects and things.
I know, it's too much.
So Sahadeva actually has...
way more entomology here than I was expecting. I'll be very honest about that.
Sahadeva eats and has visions and is able to kind of see the universe in a different way. So he becomes very wise, and in South Indian mythology, he is responsible for the sciences of astrology, and then all of things kind of connected to that. So that's just a little nice little tidbit with Sahadeva.
Are we sure it wasn't a morsel of mushroom and not flesh?
No.
Great.
Yeah, I'm not. You know, I wasn't there in the moment. And
indeed.
Who knows? There was a lot of smoke and things going on. Probably ghee involved.
Sure, there was ghee involved.
So they decide that the kids are going to go back to Hastinapur. They're going to live their lives there as kings in this loyal kingdom. They're taken back. The Rishis come with them just to kind of like guide them and make sure they're safe. Dhritarashtra, blind Dhritarashtra and Gandhari come out. The old and wise Bhishma comes out, the person who's kind of been like, in a way, taken on the responsibility of continuing this bloodline through a lot of like hurt and pain and deaths. But they all kind of come out and they welcome the five Pandavas into Hastinapura. So all of a sudden now, these kids have been living in the woods, they've been living in the forest, learning from rishis on like the bare minimum. Now they're in a palace. Mm-hmm. And they're still kids. Like, I believe, like, Yudhishthira, who is the oldest, is 15.
Okay.
And so then Duryodhana is about the same age as well, from Dhritarashtra.
It's like Sound of Music.
Mm-hmm.
Like Sound of Music, yeah. Duryodhana fucking hates this shit.
Uh-huh.
And he especially hates Bhima, the god of the son of the god of the wind, the second born.
Okay.
Not
Bhishma, the old wise guy.
Not Bhishma. He loves Bhishma.
Bhima
loves him.
Wind kid.
Wind kid. Yeah.
Okay.
And Bhishma and Bhima actually form a bit of a connection.
Okay.
And that like that makes Duryodhana even more jealous because he felt like he used to be the favorite. He's jealous of Bhima. They were born on the same day, too. So there's that kind of, like,
you gotta share a birthday.
Rivalry. Yeah, exactly. You gotta share a birthday,
ugh,
too.
It's the worst.
Bhima is...
You never get your own gifts.
Yeah. Bhima is super strong. He's super excited to be here. And is enjoying it maybe a little too much. So...
Say more about that.
Sure, like, and like, this is where, like, versions differ. Like, oh, he's just an excitable kid. This excitable kid probably did a lot of bullying to the 100 other sons of,
When you can harness the literal power of the wind, I could see how you would be, you know, getting a little high on your own supply.
Yeah. And it's, exactly. And hard to kind of stop him, he would, like, knock down, or, like, kick on trees that the other 10...
Were there any other superpowered kids, or no?
Duryodhana is also very strong.
Okay.
And, like, this is, like, a lot of this... I think they're all, to some extent, super strong, coming down from having Dhritarashtra as their father.
Okay.
Duryodhana, the firstborn of this, very strong. Strongest out of all of the 100 Kauravas, but not as
like,
strong.
Is there... So question, like,
mm-hmm.
Midnight's Children by Salman Rushdie.
Yeah.
Is there...
But
I mean, like, deals with this idea of super-powered kids who are born, like, the first minute of, like, India's, like, independence as a country.
Oh, fun.
And, like, the closer they are born to midnight, the stronger their powers. But I wonder... and then there are two who are born on the stroke of midnight.
Oh, interesting.
And,
I don't recall the context of that so far, but
I'm just wondering if that draws at all from, you know, this tradition of sort of like this sort of like this large cohort of special kids.
Yeah, I mean, so I haven't read Midnight Suns, but this is such a huge part of like Indian culture, and as a writer, like I can't imagine that Salman Rushdie wasn't like familiar with.
It seems like the sort of shit that Salman Rushdie would maybe have passing familiarity
absolutely
with.
I
don't
think so.
So. Yeah, so Duryodhana is just becoming more and more angry with Bhima, with the things that he kind of does. He really doesn't like that this kid is the strongest now.
Mm-hmm.
And there will be points where, like, 10 of the Kauravas will try and pile on Bhima, and Bhima will just shut
Spoiler,
him off.
That will not work.
Yeah.
Yeah, didn't work.
Yeah.
Exactly.
He just flings them off.
Just flings them off
kind
and,
like... the Anakin Skywalker.
Like every cartoon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that.
So, there's a lot of animosity building between these young kids.
Mm-hmm.
And Duryodhana's also, like, concerned because he figured, again, that he would be king. Because his father was. And there's, like, conversations between him and... Sorry, there's another character named Vidura, who was the brother of Dhritarashtra and Pandu.
Mm-hmm.
Very wise, very smart, very intelligent, would be a fantastic king. But the son of a maid. So instead, he is a minister / advisor.
A lowborn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's talks with him where, like, Duryodhana's like, well, shouldn't I be king? My father was the oldest. I'm like, yeah, but, you know, no one was actually following the bloodline. because of all these other changes that have happened to us. You know, by that logic, Yudhishthira is going to be king because he's older than you. And so... So he's looking for ways to kind of, like, already to, like, weaken these five Pandavas. They are... And they're all that. And the other factor doesn't help is that everyone fucking loves them. Everyone fucking loves them. They're like
the golden kids.
Yeah. Gotcha. And each golden in their own way.
Like, they're cool, each a they're son nice, of a god. They're cute, they're fun, except for the bully.
Oh, I'm sure the bully's very popular, too.
He's probably popular. He's
he may not be a bully, but everybody.
He's like
the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or like the captain of the lacrosse team.
Captain of the rugby team. That guy. No, he's not that popular.
So Duryodhana starts having very, very evil thoughts. In comes his mother's brother. Younger brother, Shakuni. So, brother to Gandhari.
Getting, like, premonitions of fratricide. Is that where we're going here?
I don't know what that word means.
Killing your brother.
Yeah. Cousins.
Spoilers.
Shakuni and Duryodhana form a connection, and they start kind of talking, and Shakuni says, like, he's the strongest one of them. Mm-hmm. If you get rid of him... the others will weaken and fall. And so they start to scream.
They have, like, interlocking power?
Just the fact that they, you know, the five of them are very close. Bhima's the strongest.
Okay, so just, like, psychologically break down.
Psychologically. Oh, yeah, okay. Just psychologically.
Got it.
Yeah. And
they'd
so...
they'd be sad.
I mean, sure.
Yeah. They scheme to kill... They scheme to kill Bhima.
Okay.
No.
And...
Not Bhima.
They form this plan, so... And people are kind of on, like, you, that Duryodhana, like, doesn't like any of them in this. But he has this idea of, like, all right, there's this place
Bhima
called...
Bhima, fart into this bag full of knives.
Oh, my God! Don't do it,
I mean, just a regular bag. Just
don't
a regular bag.
Don't do it,
yeah.
Bhima.
Sure.
No! What a way to go! Oh, no. Bhima.
I'm guessing that... Please continue.
His poor butt.
Yep.
Duryodhana throws a beach party. A river party.
Oh, this is way, way more fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we're all going to go. We're going to all take our riches and our wealth. We're going to have a feast by the river. We're going to swim in the river. We're going to have a grand old time. We'll come back and eat some more because we're kings and shit. And everyone's kind of like, well, this is finally a nice side of this fella.
Yeah.
He's like, we got to embrace this. Like, he's something's happened, you know. He's changed his tune. We gotta run with it. Like, he's actually being nice and a good cousin and things. So, yeah, they all go and they all have, like, a ton of fun and they start to feast. They're feeding each other and Duryodhana is feeding Bhima.
Oh.
And what he's feeding is poisoned.
No!
Yeah. Not so, good food, but... Bad food.
Yeah.
Evil food.
That tastes fantastic. And Duryodhana, Bhima also, he fucking loves to eat.
Well, sure.
Bhima loves
to eat. He's
really
strong.
Eat. He's
really
strong. He's like a Hulk fella.
Yeah.
He's gotta eat. You know, all the shawarmas he can handle.
Sure.
Nice.
Buddy.
And so he eats a whole ton of these things, these wonderful foods. And then Duryodhana is like, oh,
just a shitload of poison.
Just a shit ton of poison.
Okay.
And Duryodhana's like, all right, let's head back. Back to, like, the feasting parts, like, after they do the swim.
Yeah.
And Bhima just kind of, like, was like, I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
So he just kind of, like,
From poison.
Oh, buddy.
So he just sits down, like, you know, out of the river's way, basically, and just kind of falls asleep.
Oh. A bag of knives.
So Duryodhana commands everyone to go, and Duryodhana sticks back,
of course.
And he goes to his unconscious cousin, binds him in reeds, and just gently, like, just pushes him into the river.
Damn.
Yeah, some of those bad omens make a little bit more sense now with Duryodhana. And then he goes back and...
Not cool.
The feast happens. Someone asked, like, where's Bhima? And it's like, well, he was on the river, but, you know, I guess he just went home. He was exhausted. So the Pandavas are like, all right, fine.
I don't know. He tied up his own legs and poisoned himself. I tried to stop him, but...
Oh,
yeah.
Bhima.
This
makes sad.
Yeah. It's like,
what a horrible... Ugh. It's just it's horrible.
Yeah, it's absolutely horrible.
Thanks. Thank you for the comfort.
I'm putting my hand on her shoulder.
I appreciate it.
Comfort.
Yeah.
Okay, the comfort, it's just the comfort is up.
It's such a visual, like, it's such a, like, him just slowly pushing him into the river is just, bye, Felicia.
Yeah,
like,
it's awful.
So sad.
So the feast happens at home, and then they explain to the Pandavas that, oh, he must have gone back to your...
I thought he was with you.
Yeah.
Damn it.
And, you know, that night, Duryodhana and Shakuni celebrate, like, just themselves.
It sounds like a Columbo episode.
Yeah.
Shakuni brings in a couple girls then to, like, make it even more exciting as they celebrate, because the next day, of course, they're going to be, you know, acting like they're in, like, supreme mourning once things kind of start to happen. It's all kind of comes out.
So let's have a wild orgy the night before.
Yeah,
let's have a wild orgy the night before.
Just get it all out. Just
in my mind,
all the emotions, all the fluids, just get it all out.
Get it all out, and then the next day we can play our part.
Yeah,
we can mourn.
Yeah,
air quotes.
In my mind, this is still like a 15-year-old's plan, because, like, who the fuck else is it gonna be?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you know, like, everyone, like, you're the first suspect here, man. Like,
yeah,
who would have had a reason to any conceivable motive?
The night before, mm-hmm. after this,
you seem feast. To be having a celebratory murder orgy. Is that true? I mean, I wouldn't call it. I mean, what do you mean?
Did we hear, yay, Bhima's dead from your hut the other night? Did we hear that? Or did they live in a palace?
You seem consumed with guilt?
No guilt.
No guilt. The Pandavas return back. They return to their mother, Kunti, and, like, do we know where Bhima is? And, like, she has no idea.
Oh, God.
You know, they start figuring out. They call Vidura. If you remember Vidura being the wise...
Yeah.
One who should be king. And, like, Kunti tells him, like, who else could have done this? And it's like, we don't know if anything's been done. Keep in mind, we're all going to play politics here. If you let on that you know for sure that you believe that he did this when there's no evidence, it's going to come back against you and the family.
Yeah.
So people are treading lightly.
Be vigilant, watch out, but don't make this an issue, sadly.
Just be cool.
Yeah, just be cool with your second son dying, you know?
But do they know he's dead yet? They don't know yet.
They don't know.
Has anyone checked the river?
We can check in with the river. Bhima floats. I mean, Bhima is like, he's tied up, he's been pushed.
He's made of literal wind. Of course he floats.
Yeah. Well, no, he's also eaten a lot of heavy poison.
Oh, heavy poison.
So he sinks down. Mm-hmm. And the river kind of feels him kind of coming down. Mm-hmm. And the river is actually also a maternal parent of Bhima down, well, up the line.
Bhishma, right?
Yeah, Bhima. Yeah, through Bhishma.
Through Bhishma.
Yeah. Bhishma's mother is actually the River Ganges.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Look what I remembered.
Yeah.
Wow.
So.
Good old Grandma Ganges.
Yeah, Grandma Ganges.
Grandma Ganges. So Grandma Ganges kind of actually, like, sends these, create ripples in the ocean, creates a lot of unrest, that snakes come and start biting Bhima.
Okay.
But it
Bhima's
actually...
Bhima's body?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it actually kind of triggers a reaction in him to have him wake up.
Yes.
He's still sinking, but the poison of the serpents fights the poison that's already in him.
Yes!
And Bhima continues...
Quick, administer the antidote poison!
Yes.
Bhima continues to float down into the river and at some point enters the secret realm of the Nagas.
The dragon things?
So Nagas in this mythology are a people who can also turn into snakes.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay, snake people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Amazing.
So
were the snake people sucking the poison out of him?
The snake people were biting him because they thought he was a threat. Oh, and because of this restlessness of the river.
Got it.
But it was actually in service to him.
Cool.
Um,
they were being duped.
Well,
yeah,
kind of, yeah.
And it doesn't go too well for them.
Because you're just using us for our poison again, aren't you?
Yeah.
Bima sinks down, and I guess at some point water is no longer an issue. So okay. He goes into like a secret realm.
Secret realm, all bets are off.
Yes.
What is the name? Oh, I forgot to take the name of the realm.
Bubble Town.
Bubble Town.
Bubbleville?
Sinks down into it and kind of like wakes up a little startled, surrounded by snakes biting him.
Sure. That's not pleasant.
And he starts...
Shitlantis.
Yeah. I like that.
Oh,
this
man.
This is Shitlantis.
That's so... It's like,
God, this undersea city sucks.
This is garbage.
It's the worst fucking realm I've ever been to.
My first realm, and it's this.
Yeah.
First realm, and it's just a bunch of watery snake people.
and they're all dicks.
They're all biting me.
They're all dicks.
Yeah. And they're all, at this point, just snakes biting him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he
Welcome to
Shitlantis. He reacts as a 15-year-old super strong Superman-type kid would do.
He murders all of them.
He starts, like, fighting back.
Well,
and,
sure.
Like, smashing their heads on the ground and... just fighting back, and they're
what
like...
What would you do?
Last thing I remember, I was feasting, and now fucking this.
I know.
Now this thing's feasting on me, so he's going a little, like, apeshit crazy on these snakes.
Obviously.
With reason.
With
yes.
reason. Snakes are like, what the fuck's happening here? Like, this ain't no normal kid.
Yeah.
They, like, you know, that those that are able to, like, get away, and they go up to their king, Vasuki.
Mm-hmm.
Vasuki. Okay.
And so Vasuki's like, yeah, what's up? He's like, this kid has somehow come down here and he's killing the shit out of us. He's super strong.
Well, did you bite the shit out of him? Well, I mean,
well,
we did.
Yes.
Yeah.
All of us, I guess,
uh-huh.
Now that you mention it. Whatever.
Did you tell the others to stop? Well, no.
No.
No, he's killing us.
Well, okay.
I'm just imagining if my kids, like, came up to me and, like, it's kind of like all of us. Like, well, did you start biting him in the face? Like, well, yes. Like,
so
well, natural consequences there, buddy.
Exactly.
Gonna get murdered by the wind child if you bite him in the butt.
It's mm-hmm. always the butt with you.
I mean...
I like it.
I imagine the face was full, so they just leave the butt in some
the
other places.
The butt would be delicious.
I'm also imagining him farting, like, what would the child of the wind farting
No.
It'd be amazing.
It would be.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm hoping sometime I'll come across some...
Maybe that's one of the things that creates, like, those forests where, like, the trees are growing sideways.
Maybe.
Bima farted.
Yeah.
He does eat a lot,
just imagine, like, a big bronze plaque where it just says,
God,
the forest of sideways trees, Bima farted.
If he eats, like, a lot of lentils and stuff, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, oh boy.
Yeah.
And if he likes to eat, if that's his thing, I imagine this happened a lot.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably unspoken one of the other problems.
Yeah, that you know, I mean, with that, maybe Duryodhana was just trying to help the environment by trying to kill Bima. Who knows?
Okay, so...
The equivalent of the cows of today. Hello, dear listeners. I wanted to tell you about my business, Imagination Life Coaching. Through Imagination Life Coaching, I work one-on-one with clients to help you achieve your life goals. I'm someone who believes that we human beings have incredible minds, but sometimes life, stress, and our internal negative chatter can turn our minds against us and pull us away from reaching our potential. But we have the ability to reverse this and go way beyond. Through Imagination Life Coaching, I help you imagine new possibilities for yourself, create new systems and ways of thinking, and commit to healthy habits that help you take ownership of your mind, so you can achieve any dream you set your mind to. If you are a creative artist, I can help you delve deeper into your creative action. Visit my website, spjaylarge.com, that is spjaylarge.com, to schedule your first free consultation. All right, back to the show.
The Nagas are just sort of like, he's killing the shit out of us,
yeah.
And he's like, uh-huh, go on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Vasuki thinks about it and, like, you know, listens to what they're saying. I was like, oh, I think I know who this kid is.
Hmm.
So he goes.
I've heard rumblings of this.
Our seismologists are quite familiar with this child.
Couldn't stay away.
Yep.
So he goes back. He goes to see this kid and...
I'm the king of Shitland.
Breaks up the fighting. Reveals his, like, human-esque form.
Uh-huh.
And embraces him. Embraces the kid. He's like, okay, this is...
Sorry about my murdery children.
Yeah.
Thanks for killing some of them. Yeah. There's too many anyways.
Right, because they are his kids, but Vuzuki's yeah. like, oh, it's Bima.
Would have been awkward for me to do it, but personally, fewer kids.
No. Yeah.
Not a problem.
But, so the entire atmosphere now changes, because now Bima is suddenly a welcome guest here.
So, how does this go down? Is this sort of like, were mistakes made when it's just like he wasn't all the way dead? He was heavily poisoned and pushed in the river, but like didn't like Duryodhana didn't go for the killing shot.
He thought
it's like a classic mistake.
It's a classic. Well, you didn't give him enough poison to kill him.
Yeah,
because he's so powerful.
Right, yeah.
But then if you definitely have to make him unconscious, sent him into the river. Did not expect that he would enter the secret world.
Well, and he forgot about Grandma.
Hmm.
Yeah, he did. No one thought about Grandma.
Grandma's no one thought about Grandma, and she's like, not my baby.
Mm-hmm. And it's great-grandma, too, so it's like, so further down the road.
This just seems like a rookie mistake on Duryodhana's. I mean, it seems like he's brought low, poisoned on his own petard, brought low by his own hubris.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But, you know, he's 15.
That's true.
Hopefully it was a 15-year-old.
Hubris does crest around that age.
Yeah.
That's true.
So Vasuki welcomes Bima. Explains that apparently there's also, like, they have a similar bloodline, too.
Mm-hmm.
So somewhere down the line, like, they are related.
Okay.
He introduces him to this other Naga Aryaka. Yep, Aryaka, who was actually a, not a descendant, an ancestor of Kunti.
Mm.
Oh.
So, and it's part of this part of being in a different, in a magical world where people live forever in this world.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
So this is basically like an ancestor of Bima's too.
Cool.
So yeah, they take Bima in and, you know, ask him like kind of piece together why he's here. But it's a kind of this moment of just surprise celebration. I guess they sweep away all the dead cobras from before.
Sure.
And they pay no attention to these dead cobras.
They tend to his butt wounds.
Yeah. They don't just
send. Sir, are you butt hurt? Hurt yes. In the butt, I mean.
Yes, yes, I am. May I have a butt?
Balm.
Mm-hmm.
I need butt balm and a butt band-aid.
And a butt rub.
Mm-hmm. And a butt rub.
They provide Bima with the things he loves. Food.
Butt rubs.
Butt rubs. You know, they do spoil him quite a bit.
Butt rubs.
We're talking about snakes, too, and butt rubs. Okay.
A term that's all too uncommon.
Uh-huh. They offer... So this realm is also a realm of extreme wealth.
Hmm.
There's gold, there's jewels, there's no light from the sun over here.
Yeah.
But everything is encrusted in jewels. People are wearing clothes that have jewels on them. And so from those
But there's no
things,
light from the sun. Where's the light from?
Apparently the jewels.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Magic jewels.
Magic jewels.
That's cool.
So it's like the deep ocean, basically.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the deep ocean with the but without the awful anglerfish.
You're like banglerfish.
Yes. Oh, that was good.
I like that.
Oh, that was good.
The banglerfish of Shitlantis.
We are the banglerfish of Shitlantis.
Didn't realize that was a real song.
It is now.
It'll be now.
Wow.
They offer him a ton of this of their wealth and Bima's.
The version of this story that archaeologists recreate that 100 centuries from now from this podcast is going to be amazing.
Yeah,
it really is.
I agree.
And you can hear the song on the extras.
Mm-hmm.
You've been looking at the ancient text, and things really took a sharp turn in the early 2000s.
Somewhere in like distant text in the future, it's going to be like, "Fuck, was a Sanskrit word."
Yeah, it totally was.
Yes.
None of the texts of today. He's offered all, like, he's offered jewels and gems and like, riches, and he's no interest in that. And it's like, well, you know, you're already a king. So I guess, like, you wouldn't have any interest in this. Oh, I know what you'd like. They prepare something called Nagamrita. Amrita is, like, the name of, like, a magical drink. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is one prepared in this already magical place.
Yeah.
With all these, like, yeah, otherworldly
magic luminescent gems.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so, like, there's even, like, some gems in this. Mm. There's certain poisons to certain degrees. But the
Had poison.
Yeah, but don't forget that when he was bitten, poison. It cleared the other poison out. So this is more scientific, and it's, like, concentrated substance that will make him immune to other poisons and also make him stronger.
Oh, right.
And normally you do just, like...
This is, like, a +4 potion of healing.
It is.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a +4 potion of healing.
Yeah.
This is wonderful.
And it's, like, you just take a little sip, but they brought Bhima, like, a big giant-ass cup of it.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, like, you gotta drink it slowly. And Bhima, like, smokes and just...
Oh, no.
Tosses it back.
Tosses it back.
Oh, shit.
He's fine.
Okay.
He's
I thought, like, he'd explode.
Guess when you're, like,
for...
the child you win, like, you can just really do shots like that.
You can. Yeah.
Okay.
Damn.
Okay.
And he does, like, 7 more.
Okay.
What?
Yeah. Just keep, like, 7 more, and it's, like, a heavy liquid, this. Like, it's like, the density of mercury, but he downs them all. Takes a rest, but basically is now, like, 1,000 times stronger.
Shit.
Damn.
From this experience.
He's gonna come out of the river, like...
So he's gonna explode, like, Godzilla from the River Ganges.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the noise I was making. You used the right descriptive words.
Yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Teamwork.
I mean, yeah, yep. Makes the revenge work.
Yeah.
Teamwork makes the revenge work.
Yeah.
We'd be great at that together. Yeah.
At revenge work?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
I think we could...
Just make a list.
Yeah.
Just like Arya.
Yeah.
So, he's, they take him back to the surface world, secret tunnels and his magical
I'm just, like, imagining
world.
This, like, Rocky-like montage of him just, like, slamming insane, enchanted, like, drafts of this glowing... gem potion while at the same time just pumping
totally
like golden barbells.
Yeah,
yeah.
And he's got like glowing liquid flowing down his glistening chest.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's like running up steps, like bench pressing babes.
Uh-huh.
Snakes.
Yeah.
Snake babes.
Snake babes. Yeah.
Yep.
Snakes with big boobs.
Yeah.
That website probably exists.
And like, I'm sure it does.
Pulling Fort Knox's
behind
him.
Is that Rule 42 of the internet? I forget which one it is. Anyway.
He's escorted back up.
Mm-hmm.
All is, he actually comes back right to where he
So does
was.
He know what has happened at this point? Is he like, oh shit, I was totally poisoned. Like, does he get that?
So once he comes up, like...
Do they take him aside and they're like, bro?
They explain it to him, but he's kind of wrapped in this excitement and this, like, he's in this whole new world of yours.
And he's gem drunk.
I love him. He's eating new food.
Yeah.
Yeah. Once he kind of comes up to the surface and he's like, all right, I gotta go back home.
You're right. Oh, guys, it's been awesome, but I gotta really get an Uber here.
Yeah.
As he's making that journey back and, like, gets to recollect, and it's like, he's like, yeah, shit, my cousin tried
now
to
that I think about it.
Kill me.
Uh-huh.
Conveniently, though, I have now the strength of 1,000 former selves.
Strength of 1,000 former selves. He goes back. It's been, like, maybe 2 weeks or so, and his family's, like, in mourning. They prepared...
So his body was never found.
The body was never found.
Sure.
It had been 2 weeks or so. Again, different versions of the story.
Yeah.
Sure.
They prepared a feast, a wedding feast, or like a funeral feast of all these like vegetables and things ready to be cooked. One thing to know in Vedic traditions, a lot of these items are usually... You don't necessarily like mix different foods together so much. And so I'm not sure how they were planning on like preparing all that, but that was the idea that they would, as part of the funeral rites. And then Bhima comes back and is like, oh shit. And Bhima didn't want all of this to go to waste.
I mean, Bhima doesn't come back. He comes back.
Yeah.
And he's like,
he
hey!
So much stronger.
So he comes back like Odysseus.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Into like the court of the suitors who would steal his wife.
Yeah.
And everybody was like super excited.
He comes back to just his family first.
Okay, cool.
So he comes back with a freshly rubbed butt and terrifying power.
And terrifying strength. And, one of the first things he does is he sees all these vegetables and things, and he cooks a meal.
That's amazing.
He cooks his meal.
It's like, I'm gonna fuck up that. Holy shit! Look at this feast. Like, that's where.
Look at all the carrots and onions.
I am really starving.
I had no idea I was this hungry. I've just been drinking potions.
Nothing
for
makes
days.
Me more hungry than having eaten so much already.
Yeah. He makes. I'm just like imagining like this like Kill Bill situation where he's like coming up to like the crazy 88s and like. You know, and then suddenly he like looks over and sees Chipotle and is like, oh shit.
I'm gonna fuck up that bowl.
Like, I'll be back.
Yeah.
Don't go anywhere.
Don't go anywhere at all. Oh,
five vengeance burritos, please.
That guacamole?
So all this to say that he makes this meal and this food, this dish called avial, which is a dish that apparently like we can make today.
Ooh,
the recipes for it online.
Great.
Have you done this?
I have not. And it's a South Indian dish. I know there's like vegetables and
coconut
milk.
There has to be coconut.
Curry leaves and all that stuff. So no.
So all
I
the
haven't.
Normal things.
But when we hit a point in this podcast at some point, we should bring everyone together and have avial.
Yeah, we should.
Hopefully we like it.
And wreak vengeance.
And wreak vengeance. Yeah.
On competing podcasters.
We'll feed each other avial. And hope for the best.
They later then, you know, they go back to the palace and start eating with them. And they're like, and Vidura is like, keep your eyes open. Like, let's see how people react to you being back.
Mm-hmm.
And like, they know Duryodhana's involved. Like, you know, he's been happy for a while. He's been placating, being unhappy for a while.
Despite his obvious motives and lack of sadness. They figured out he was one who maybe did it.
They figured out. But there's no going to, like, Dhritarashtra and Gandhari and saying this to his blind parents.
So he's being protected by, like, political considerations.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, as in, like, there's no point in telling them this because it's going to be... But they know. Like, the Pandavas absolutely know that this happened. And Vidura figures out that, oh, Shakuni as well.
Oh, man.
So it's definitely these two
that begins.
This. And as things kind of go forward, Duryodhana starts to kind of bring his brothers more into the mix and starts trusting more of this 100 of the other Kauravas.
Okay.
And so...
What if we tell, I don't know, 40 brothers?
Yeah, there's 40 of them.
Just to keep start. It on the DL.
To start.
The other 60, I don't know about them yet.
Yeah.
59.
You know. Oh, 59.
Oh, your math is good. Oh, but there's Jujutsu too.
Oh, okay.
So,
oh, 58.
Which they do.
It's hard to keep them
all
straight.
60. Because you add Jujutsu, don't you? Let's see.
Yeah, because they're not included in the 100 brothers.
Isn't he one of the brothers, though?
Jujutsu is not one of the 100. Jujutsu had a natural birth, because he was the one who was Dhritarashtra the maid.
Okay, he wasn't like fired out of a womb like a machine gun.
No, he's the one that came out absolutely perfect, but his mother was a fucking maid.
Oh,
so
right. I see.
He came out
the perfect chiseled lowborn.
Yeah.
Yeah, perfectly. Like, handsome, smart, all
so
the things.
Trash.
That
so
was
so
both of them.
Yeah.
It's both Vidura.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of this kind of thing. Like, Vidura was the, son of a maid and super wise and super smart. And Jujutsu, so at this point in the story, Jujutsu goes along with Duryodhana. Jujutsu's like, all right, these fucking Pandavas.
Yeah.
We gotta deal with these shitheads. And all the other 100 are like, I don't believe the sister's involved in these discussions. And
of course
so
not.
They
that would track.
Why would they let the one sister in on it?
Smurfette never made it to the high
council. She's just on the other side of the door going, guys, I don't want to do cross stitch
anymore.
There's
a lot of dishes back here.
Guys, why do I have to be... I don't want to iron any more underwear. Guys, can I come play with you? Anyway, I really want to shoot an arrow.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'd be good. Sorry.
Not her place. So the 100 brothers start to really conspire and start doing all these other plans. And at this point, just kind of, you know, figure it out from whatever Bugs Bunny cartoons. But all the plans just, they go to shit.
Of course.
They try, like, to be sneaky and kill the Pandavas in several different ways. And it just never things always mess up. Things are not going to plan. Like sometimes
someone trips on a banana peel.
Yeah.
It's like the CIA and Fidel Castro.
But they seem to know everything. Like, the bonfires don't really fall for, like, they see the banana peel.
Yeah.
They don't smoke the exploding cigar.
They pick up the banana peel and throw it away because they care about the environment.
Yes, because they're the good bonfires.
Exactly.
So they, but it's not just their awareness that the people trying to kill us. It is also jujutsu. So Yuyutsu is faking being along with Duryodhana and the 100 Kurovas, but he's actually secretly helping the Pandavas. They are communicating through very subtle and intelligent ways. He'll leave scratches on a tree.
Okay.
Little marks on the wall. But they figured out a form of communication that protects Yuyutsu when they are very concerned about you. Like, you're taking a big risk. Yeah. Like, he will kill you.
Yeah.
He will do this, but they come up with this really subtle form of communication.
Cool. Morse code during butt rubs.
Yeah.
It's a specific way to scratch a butt.
Yeah. Mm. If I press here for an extra second, he's coming for you in the morning.
If I press the other side for a longer, he's coming for you in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if I press this other size, it's because the section is tight.
It's because I can't get enough of your skull today.
Yes.
Ah, cousin love.
Even though I'm deathly afraid of whatever wind comes out of you.
Keep a hold of that sphincter, son.
So the lines and the forces and the sides is like basically at the end of this have been the Kauravas, they want the kingdom led by Duryodhana. They want the nation. Pandavas are the enemies. Pandavas know. Yep, they're trying to kill. We have to somehow figure out this political thing we have going on here and figure it out. Yuyutsu's helping us. This will be the story of the Mahabharata. The main aspect of the Mahabharata that most people, I think, that are familiar with it know, it is a war between the Pandavas and the Kauravas.
Yeah.
And this is the moment, of course, clearly, where it's like, all right, like, right when they were, like, young, so, like I said, like, I think 14, 15, Yudhishthira's a little bit older, like, now it's when...
How old would Bhima be?
At this point, I'm saying Bhima and Duryodhana, I'm guessing like 15.
Okay.
15, maybe 16.
Yeah, so very impressionable ages. Mm-hmm. Ugh.
So, to pick up the Bhima's thread, like, so is the tension building before he comes back, or is it only afterwards?
There was, from Duryodhana's perspective, like, he wants to be king. And he knew that these Pandavas were out there.
Right.
And would come back at some point.
Okay.
And so there was that. But
he was always leery of them.
He was always leery of them.
Okay.
And of course, the, you know, the bullying.
So does Bhima, like, play his cards really close to his chest? Or does he, like, does he call out sort of, like, you?
What do you mean?
In terms of, like he survives an assassination attempt.
Yeah.
And so, from which he returns.
Mm-hmm.
And so, does he keep this so as like, oh yeah, I just must have fallen asleep and fell in the river. I don't know.
That is what they, all the Pandavas and Kunti and Vidura, that is what they do. They sweep it under the rug.
Okay.
Because they don't think it'll be believed, and they think that if that kind of comes up, it could be damaging to them, it'll be chaotic.
Sure.
And so, is Bhima okay with that? Like, he thinks that that's the right call?
That's up to us to decide. You know, okay. He's got his brothers with him.
Yeah.
He trusts his brothers. He trusts Yudhishthira.
Mm-hmm.
Now, fortunately, Yuyutsu is helping them out and protecting them further.
Mm-hmm.
Bhima's hot-headed, for sure.
I just feel like it would be hard to contain that kind of righteous anger.
Yeah.
Especially when he comes back 1,000 times stronger. You're just, like, primed for, a massacre.
He's got his family by him, and he's also been trained by the sages of the woods and meditation techniques and all the wisdom of the Vedas. So
he's not being led around by his negative emotions.
But it's there. Like, I can't imagine it's not there. Like, I'm just telling you, like, these are possibly ways that he was able to contain it.
He's supported by his family at this point. Right? So,
but his personal vengeance is not the story.
He definitely, like, that builds.
Okay.
As, like, all the emotions and all that build, and so, and more things happen later on. And, yeah, like, it gets to certain points when Bhima's... At this point in the stories that I've read, like, he's... he's keeping his patience. You know, he's still young as well, and so I imagine
is he
that
biding
he's still,
his. When you say he's biding his time,
yeah, and I would say all the Pandavas in a sense of biding their time.
Okay.
To do, but they don't. I don't think there's a sense of what yet to do. Bhima's probably like, mostly just trusting his family. But
do they perceive Duryodhana as a serious challenge?
Oh, he tried to kill one of them, so yeah.
Right, but I mean, like, but like beyond that, like, do they think that, like, well, he can't do that again, so is there anything else that he can do?
There are, like, numerous attempts, and we'll get into some of the more serious attempts.
Are the other brothers worth anything?
This is what's interesting. The other brothers are
are they just a bunch of dudes? Is it like a fraternity?
They're just a bunch of dudes.
Okay.
Well, like it's always about the oldest, right? So
yeah, but it's weird. Especially when I started reading this and I got to like the 100 brothers, I'm like, oh, this is why the story is so long. It's because we got to get through every one of these guys.
But not really.
Oh, no, not really. It's mostly just that Duryodhana's like posse.
Okay.
They're basically Duryodhana's posse.
Gotcha.
That's where we'll end today, with the lines drawn.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Poised for conflict.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh, though.
Oh, man.
Yeah, well, you guys into this one. I like this one.
Oh, Shitlantis.
Shitlantis. Hell of a place to recover. Unexpected.
Totally unexpected. Love it.
I mean, like, pretty solid 180 from his arrival to his departure from Shitlantis.
Yes, 100%. Yeah.
Really redeems itself.
Yeah. Lots of interesting ways that people died in these stories in particular.
Mm-hmm. I was stunned by how, like, oh yeah, you killed a whole bunch of, snake kids, but it was an accident. We get it. You're fine. Here's a potion to make you
stronger. It was justified. Like, would it have done the same thing?
You are distantly related to us, so it's okay.
Yeah.
I got a level with you. I was this close to doing the same thing myself yesterday, so.
Yeah.
I feel you on that. You want another potion?
Yeah. Another 7 potions.
How's your butt?
How's your butt?
What I'm interested in tracking the story is doing it this way is also, like, because it's this oral tradition and many, I imagine, inconsistencies, like, this rivalry between Bhima and
Duryodhana
continues. They're both very good at the mace.
Oh.
So the mace in like
that's
ancient India is it's a short-ish staff with a giant fucking ball on one end.
Okay.
If you've ever seen images of Hanuman,
yeah,
which I can show you because I have a statue of him there, but these are maces in this time. And they're both, Peter's looking at one now.
Yep.
Oh.
That's like a spiked one.
That's a spiked one.
Yeah.
That might not be. They're like just
a smooth
balls.
I know,
a smooth smashing sphere.
That's a badass one that you do, yes. It's not historically accurate in this very, very academic podcast.
Let the record show that whatever.
Let the record show that whatever.
Yeah.
So one of the things I'm interested in reading the story and studying it more in-depthly is that, because they have clashes in contests as well as in actual fights and things, and somehow they match up, like, in later stories. Like, in this part of the story, it's clear that Bhima started off being stronger than everyone, and now, of course, as we've learned, is 1,000 times stronger. And I'm like, are there hidden stories where Duryodhana also became stronger because they become somehow in the stories evenly matched later on? But I haven't read why, and like one argument can be that Duryodhana is just actually way, way more skilled.
Mm-hmm.
But even when you're way, way more skilled, you're talking someone who's 1,000 times fucking stronger than you, you know? Like, the greatest martial artist in the world isn't going to stand up to the Hulk.
I mean, it might be sort of like, you know, Magic the Gathering started out with like this core group of cards that all related to each other, and then you just keep piling shit in there, and finally it's just like, I don't know what the fuck, like, you've got all this stuff in place. So maybe someone just, maybe that got glossed over.
Maybe it got glossed over. So
maybe.
It's interesting, like, getting deeper into the story as I do this. Like, let's see if I can figure out some things to make him strong again.
Yeah, well, and I mean, you know, in that storytelling tradition, like, to what extent would it have been important that sort of, like, that little inconsistency would have been even addressed?
Yeah.
You know,
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's one thing that's interesting, like, to some of these like very, very old stories, it's kind of interesting to think about like what would the role of this story have been mm-hmm. at the time, and like yeah. how would it have been, you know, like these days there's, you know, we, you know, in sort of like the modern United States, like we consume stories for entertainment.
Yeah.
Right.
And have like certain expectations of like tight narrative and whatever. And, you know, whereas some of these more sort of like languid, sprawling, epic stories would have just served a different function.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, I mean, like yeah. you, I am trained to look for those sorts of things.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And of course, with this story as well, is the fact that it's been told numerous times. It's told over, like, there are some theories that say 3000 BC, some that say 1500 BC.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Pandavas, like, fathers are not gods,
mm-hmm.
And they're kind of referred to as devas, there's ideas that it came from a time before the establishment of, like, the mightier gods, like Shiva and... what's the other ones? Brahma and the one Vishnu. Yeah. Mm. So of course, and then like these stories weaved its way into because the character Krishna is and Arjuna
would,
also.
Would Ganesh have figured into any of these stories?
The story of this being told is that a sage Vyasa brought the story to Ganesha, and uh-huh. Vyasa is an immortal. So he's lived through the entire Mahabharata stories. The sage goes up to Ganesha and basically narrates the story to him as Ganesha writes it down.
Okay.
So that is where Ganesha's fits into the story.
It's sort of like a meta narrative framework.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So.
That's interesting that there is like that. I mean, that framework you see here and again, where there's sort of like. There's this sense of like in the story is being told.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like self-telling stories, kind mm-hmm. of. Where like the telling of the story is itself part of the story.
Yeah.
Which is really kind of like, that's just kind of fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that relates to just, I mean, as you said, like this would have been related orally for just
yeah.
right.
centuries.
Yeah.
Millennia.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there was, you know, a story in the telling of a story, like, they weren't different.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there were no stories that were, did not involve, like, a storyteller mm-hmm. and an audience.
Sure.
Yeah.
Whereas totally. I feel like these days, like, you know, like, stories are abstracted from their, you know, they're delivered the telling vessel disappears, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas that...
What do you mean by the telling vessel?
As in, like, you know...
What is the vessel?
Like, when you're watching... Like, if you're watching a movie, you're not, like... They're not calling attention to the fact that you're watching the movie. It's
oh,
sort of,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Like, there isn't any, you know, it's... Like, the mechanism for the delivery of the story is kind of, like, not important.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas in this, it's actually in
mm-hmm.
the story.
Yeah, it is part of the... And, yeah, and features fairly prominently in the sense that Vyasa, the one who's doing this... He's the same sage who...
He's in the story.
He's in the story. And
yeah.
he kind of keeps coming in and out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's also like an interesting little thing going on there. So that's why I love the story. I'm getting into it. I'm excited to get other people into it too.
Yeah.
Right on. So,
all right. With that, thank you for being here, Peter Pearson.
Thank you. I mean, you ranged over a lot of territory today.
I'm really glad, yeah.
I feel like you told like a full 1.5% of this.
Maybe. Whew, I wish. I'm tracking it as I'm reading it like on my Kindle, like one version of it. I'm like, oh, I'm 7% in. So we got wise to go. And that's fantastic.
Yeah.
But yeah, so but the rest of this is going to be Pandavas versus the Kauravas.
Yeah.
So,
see why.
Here we go. With that... Thank you, Peter. Thank you, audience. Thank you, Azure. Have an imaginative day.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Not Your Mother's Mahabharata. Please like and subscribe to the podcast so that you don't miss our next episode. My name is Satish Jayaraj, and I am your storyteller and researcher. My wife and co-host is Azure Anderson. Azure also wrote the theme music, she did all the editing and producing, and essentially did all the work to get this podcast to you. Without her, it would just be me swearing ancient stories to friends in our living room. Join us next time for the next installment of Not Your Mother's Mahabharata, and have an imaginative day.